Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. I have SMA Type 2, and I am a columnist and forums director for SMANewsToday.com. Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast, episode 84. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. And joining me today are fellow SMA News Today contributors, Deanne Runge and Michael Morale. Michael, Deanne, how are you both today?
Good, Kevin. How about you?
Doing really well. Deanne, good to have you back as well.
Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, before we get started, if everyone could please listen to a brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast was brought to you by Genentech, the makers of an FDA-approved treatment for SMA. To learn about our study results across different types of people with SMA, visit approvedforsma.com. That's approvedforsma.com.
Okay. Well, guys, to start off, so at the time of recording, we are toward the end of this year's virtual Cure SMA conference. This is the second year that the conference has been virtual. And I was just curious if you guys have been to anything so far. I know, Deanne, you and I were at the adult social last night. Those are always really fun. Have you been able to go to any of the other sessions this week?
So far, the session timing hasn't worked out, but I'm looking forward to going back and watching some of the ones that I've heard are really good.
That's what I'm planning on as well. I also didn't really get much time because this week has been, well, and we'll get to this in a minute in terms of like now that things are reopening and restrictions are being lifted. I in my case, I've actually been getting out a lot more, and I actually went to my first wedding since COVID started on the Monday of this week. And so I missed some of the events that was when the conference launched. So I missed some of the stuff then, like trivia night and that kind of thing, because I was at a wedding an hour and a half away in rural North Carolina. And so, I wanted to be there. And I heard there was a Star Wars category.
There was a Star Wars question.
I know. It's like they did it for me. And yes, I know. But yeah. And it was just really interesting being there at that wedding. Cause like I said, this was like the first kind of like remotely big event been to since the pandemic started. And, you know, I know since I've been vaccinated, like I said, I have been getting out a lot more and it's been nice, but it's also kind of weird and surreal. And that's something we'll talk about throughout this episode, and I know we'll head on it with some columns later, but I was gonna ask that to you guys too, like, since things have been opening up again, have you guys been getting out more or kind of sticking to the same routine? I was just kind of curious there.
I'm staying kind of about the same right now. You know, I get out when I go to physical therapy on Tuesdays, and you know, I'll go out and do some things or shop if I need to, but right now, my work schedule, I'm so busy, I don't really leave the home. So, you know, other than Tuesdays, and, you know, I'll go out during the weekend, but it is nice to see people out, you know, moving around now, some with masks, some without. And so it is nice to see.
I'm trying to be more adventurous. I've gone to a few more places, but there's still a few things that are on my I'm not doing that list. So whether or not I should or not, it's kind of always in the back of my mind.
Oh, I totally understand that. I mean, I feel like especially after over a year of this and living through a pandemic, it's really hard to kind of break out of that bubble a little bit, you know, and I mean, I have that concern too, even though I'm vaccinated. It's like, I don't know if I'm ready to trust other people yet. But I've gone back to some of my favorite places like movie theaters and since it's really nice weather right now, it's been nice getting out to some outdoor restaurants and that kind of thing. But yeah, that's why I am eager for the conference to be back in person next year, which it will be in Anaheim, California. So this is the second year in a row doing it virtually. But yeah, Deanne, I'm in the same boat. If the timing hasn't worked out well for me to do a lot with the conference this week, but I am going to go back and watch some of the sessions. And, you know, I did get to go to the other thing Cure SMA does is the Summit of Strength events, which are local. So they go around to different states in the U.S. and do these, like, they're basically like 1-day conferences where they give presentations both on research and clinical updates, but also sessions on like physical therapy and other health related topics. And they're just a really good time for people to connect in person. And it's kind of, and it's cool too, for people who, if they can't travel like long distances or out of state, they can go to the ones, you know, that are local in their area. So we had ours in North Carolina about 3 weeks ago, I want to say. And that was really good, because that was, again, first in-person SMA event I'd been to since, you know, the pandemic started. And so that was really nice seeing people again. We had a really nice hotel space for that. And it was spread out, and, you know, we were all wearing masks. And so it was very safe. And but that was really cool to be a part of. And, you know, I'm very much looking forward to getting back in person next year. But for now, yeah, we had the adult social last night was really good. And the other thing about that too is, even though we are getting back into more in-person stuff with CareSMA, we're still going to be doing a lot of virtual stuff from here on. So it's, I think, a really good opportunity for people who, you know, like I said, if they can't travel or they feel more comfortable just interacting virtually, all of those opportunities are still going to be there. So it's, and it's been really nice. Yeah.
I do think the combination will be really helpful. Mm-hmm. I'm one of the ones that doesn't travel. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that they're going to continue with some of the virtual programs as well.
Absolutely. I really think it's a silver lining that's come out of this crazy catastrophe of a year. But yeah, I mean, we've had people come to the socials who have never done not just anything with CareSMA, but like anything SMA related before. They've been really connected with anyone in the community. And so it's been really cool to see. But yeah, so that's, yeah, no, and but it has been interesting. And like I said, going back to the topic of, you know, stuff reopening and getting out more, like for me, it has been nice, but it is also a really weird and kind of surreal feeling. And we'll talk about later in the episode, one of Brianna's columns touches on this subject. And I think understandably, a lot of people are still kind of sticking to the routine that they've had for the last year. And I totally understand that and respect that. So it's more whatever you feel comfortable with, but I am, it is nice though, being able to see friends and family safely again. And just, you know, that more people are getting vaccinated. It's a good feeling. So, but yeah, so we'll talk a little bit more about the conference a little bit with one of the news stories, but yes, I will also be going back and rewatching, or watching some of the sessions that I missed this week. Deanne, changing subject though, the one thing I wanted to ask you about. So one of the forum topics you posted a few weeks ago was about the movie Sound of Metal. And I really just want to talk with you about this movie for a minute, because this film, I thought, was out of the Oscar nominations that I saw this year. Normally, in normal times, I go and see most of the Best Picture nominations in theaters, but obviously the last year was different. And so I didn't get to see all of them, but out of the ones I did see, Sound of Metal was my favorite. And so for listeners who don't know, Sound of Metal is a film about a metal musician who goes deaf very abruptly. And it's about his journey kind of dealing with his diagnosis. And at first he's so desperate to find, you know, like a healing path, and he wants to get cochlear implants so that he can get rid of his deafness. And it's this really fascinating story. And I think for me, it was one of the more nuanced portrayals of disability that I'd seen in a long time. So I really love this film. But Deanne, I wanted to get your thoughts on it too, and see, you know, when you checked it out and what were your impressions?
Yeah, I thought it was a really good movie as well. One of the pieces that intrigued me is that, again, this is an actor that did not have the disability. But I do know that some of the characters in the movie do have deafness. So I was kind of curious what the hard of hearing community thinks of the movie, because I know movies that we've seen that have portrayals of people in wheelchairs that aren't portrayed by actors in wheelchairs, you know, there can be some issues on that. So I, regarding that aspect, I think it'd be very interesting to hear from that community what their thoughts are on that.
Sure.
I did really like following the storyline of how he struggled with his diagnosis and how in the end he came to terms with it. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Absolutely. And well, and to your point about like the deaf community's response to it, I can't speak for the entire community, but I was really curious to talk with two of our employees actually at BioNews, this like the parent company. Both are writers for our cystic fibrosis site, Brad Dell and Bailey Vincent, who plug, go check out their columns. They're fantastic. But both of them are deaf. They both have cystic fibrosis. And I was really curious to get their thoughts. And they both really loved the film. Brad actually wrote a commentary on it in one of his columns. And I talked with Bailey about it as well. And they also thought it was a very nuanced portrayal. And it spoke to really honest struggles. I think what I most respected about the film was that it wasn't this like pity story, like, oh my life is over, I'm deaf now. Like it's honest and it's raw and it's emotional. And the character does have that very negative view toward deafness at the beginning. Because it happens very suddenly in his life. And so it's this, you know, kind of comes out of nowhere and hits him and really impacts obviously his career because he's a drummer in a metal band. And so, but as the film progresses, you see this more really in-depth and nuanced character journey progress. And he joins a community, which, like you said, that's when he joins that community, that's where you see a lot of the actors playing deaf characters who are also deaf in real life. And I think that added a lot of authenticity to the story. And so, but yeah, getting their thought, Brad and Bailey's thoughts on the film was really cool. And okay. Yes, while it's always better to have an actor with, you know, the disability portray that character, I do think they did a good job trying to be as real as they could. And I mean, you know, the movie is called Sound of Metal. And
I also liked following how he was chasing, he wanted to get back to where he was.
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm. and chasing that cochlear implant. Oh, it'll solve everything. If I can just do that, it'll solve everything. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people on a lot of different treatments, even in the SMA world, oh, if I can get Spinraza, if I can get Evrysdi, oh, if I can, it'll, you know, solve everything. And well, unfortunately it doesn't, but it might help improve your situation, but it won't solve everything.
And that is such a great point. And that's, I think that's what hit me as well, is I've totally seen that narrative play out in the SMA community. And there's a scene where one of the other major characters in the film is a guy who's a Vietnam veteran. He's also deaf, and he's sort of like the head of this community. And he's trying to emphasize to Ruben, the protagonist, that to just, you know, come to terms and accept his deafness as a part of him, and that it doesn't have to interrupt or end his life. It can just be something that he learns to adapt to and live with. And he's trying to get that and like instilled in his mind, and they end up having a conflict over those differing mentalities. But it's fascinating, and I don't want to spoil the film for anyone who's seen it, because I highly recommend. But it's I that's what struck me the most, is I've totally seen that happen. And you know, people in the SMA community, exactly like you said, kind of thinking, oh, if I can just get this, that will solve everything, that will solve my problem. And that's not, you know, for me, I mean, you know me, and I've written about this numerous times in my columns, and it's a point I get across. I try to get across as much as I can about, you know, my disability is very much a part of me. Not that it defines me, but that it is something I embrace and that is a key part of my identity. And for me, that's been really liberating. And yes, I am on active treatment. It certainly improved my life, but I'm not trying to rid myself of my disability, if that makes sense. And so that's where I connected with the film the most, was just watching that journey of Ruben play out. And then with his mentor, I think his name was Paul. That was by far the most fascinating relationship to come out of the film. So it's one I highly recommend. It was really moving.
Yeah, I think it's one worth watching.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Cool. Well, just wanted to get your thoughts on that. And we will get to news in a minute. But before we do, if everyone could please listen to another brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast is made possible by a sponsorship from Genentech. Are you living with SMA, or are you a caregiver for someone who is? A treatment has been FDA approved based on studies of different types of people living with SMA. Genentech extends a special thanks to all the individuals, families, and healthcare providers who participated in the studies that led to making this treatment option a reality. To learn more about this treatment, visit approvedforsma.com.
Okay, so moving on to the news section, the first one we have, so if you have listened to the podcast for a while, or you've checked out any of our content on SMA News Today, you know we have been talking about Scholar Rock's treatment, which is now called apitegromab, for quite a while. This is the first muscle-targeted therapy for SMA that's currently in the clinical trial stage. And it was recently put on the FDA's fast track list. So, Michael, can you explain just a little bit about what fast track status means and how this will impact the progression of this treatment?
Absolutely. You know, I think we saw fast track status with Spinraza from Biogen. We saw there are basically two separate categories. You have fast track status and you have priority review status. Fast track status is given for certain treatments that do certain things, like if it's a cellular-based or a molecular-based therapy. I believe those are given fast track status. Other types of therapies are given priority review status because they deal with something other than cellular or the molecular level. So we saw fast track status with Spinraza and some others. And I wasn't really surprised to see Scholar Rock receive fast track status because they had just recently been awarded a US patent for their treatment, SRK-015, now known as apitegromab. Again, I'm still trying to figure out how they name these things. But basically what it just means is that the normal process, if a pharmaceutical creates a potential treatment, whether it be for SMA, multiple sclerosis, any rare disease, once they get all of their data, they file paperwork with the FDA so that this treatment can become a reality. Well, it normally takes anywhere from 6 months to a year during this review process. Fast track status just basically means is that they cut the time down. So instead of 6 months to a year, it could get approved within 3 to 6 months, 3 to 5 months. So it shortens the amount of time that the FDA will review the case because they've already seen enough data from Scholar Rock's other clinical trials, which they're scheduled to release new data sometime this month, hopefully in the next week or two, with regards to their clinical or phase two clinical trial. And then they've already announced that they are going to go straight into a phase three pivotal trial toward the end of this year. That was a little bit surprising. I actually thought that they would file for their approval after their clinical or after their phase two trial. But apparently they're going to go ahead and take it to a phase three, which is considered a pivotal trial because I guess the word pivotal means that this is the last chance that Scholar Rock will have to gather data to present to the FDA. So again, fast track status and priority review status, they both basically do the same thing by shortening the amount of the review time.
Right, right. And yeah, I know it's, we'll definitely report once we have more news on apitegromab, but basically this means it is moving along and it'll be really interesting to see what results come out in the coming months. And we've talked a lot about on the show how it's being tested on patients who are also on Spinraza. And so the idea of it being a combined therapy is really cool. And because like we've talked about many times before, Spinraza and Evrysdi both work at the cellular level while apitegromab works at the muscular level. And so to have that kind of combined therapy will be, you know, have really strong benefits for patients. And so, you know, it's really cool to see. And I'll read just this excerpt from the news story, which you can check out. We'll have all these articles linked in the description here. But it says the trial's main aim is to assess changes in motor function using the revised Hammersmith scale in ambulatory patients, those able to walk independently, and with the Hammersmith functional motor scale expanded in non-ambulatory patients. So again, we'll definitely have more news on this in the coming months, but this means that it is the treatment is moving along. And so we will see what comes very soon. So
Kevin, let me also correct something that I just said earlier with regards to the priority review status and the fast track status. I said that they give fast track status for certain things like cellular and molecular based. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if that's really true or not, but I know that each individual status review, whether it be fast track or priority, they're given based off what that treatment is going to do. And I'm not sure. I didn't want to give out false information that it's only cellular or molecular based, but it is based on certain criteria.
And right.
That's set by the FDA.
Right. Absolutely. So again, we'll have more news about this in the coming months, but and follow along for Unestimated today for all these stories. But the other one I want to touch on, this comes from my home state of North Carolina, is that SMA was recently added to North Carolina's newborn screening program. And this is another subject we've talked about many times on the show and on our site. Newborn screenings is basically when they can screen diseases for newborns. So like diseases like SMA, cystic fibrosis. I'll read just this excerpt from that story. So it says that the decision to add SMA to the state screenings was prompted in part by the success of a program called Early Check, an ongoing partnership between the nonprofit RTI International, Duke University, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, Wake Forest University, and the North Carolina State Laboratory of Public Health. So newborn screenings are really important for the SMA community, because if a newborn can be tested for SMA, then they're able to receive treatment a lot earlier. That's really huge that more states are adding it to their newborn screening program. I know, Deanne, we've thought, you know, that's something we talked about in the forums before too. So yeah. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that as well.
Well, obviously when you're in SMA and you can get a treatment, the earlier, the better. And so it's really good to see that more states are adopting early infant screening.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, a lot of it is just the work of various advocates, both through SMA specific organizations, but also a lot of families and individuals that have advocated for over the years. And, you know, I mean, you can check the newborn screening status in your states if you just look online. And, you know, if you ever want to write to your senator, I mean, I don't want to be like too political on this show, but it is, you know, very important subject. And so we're grateful for the many advocates who have made this possible. Well, that wraps it up for news. And for the last part of the episode, as always, I picked for the roundtable discussions, I wanted to select a few columns from our main site from recently just to discuss. So the first one, I think Michael and Dan, you can both relate to, and I know, and, well, really all of us can, but I know you, specifically you guys have been going through this as well, of the process of getting a new wheelchair and kind of the growing pains that come with it, as Katie says in her column. So this column is Embracing the Growing Pains of New Wheels by Katie Napowacki. And I'll read just this excerpt from it. It says, with each new wheelchair that's graced my life, I've undergone major physical adjustments and emotional turbulence. At a certain age, we reach a point in which the faces of cycles and patterns become less blurry and more recognizable, living with a disability, our self-awareness is often amplified. So what I really like about this column is it really speaks to the heart of kind of the struggles and the anxiety that comes with getting a new chair. Again, this is something we can all relate to, but I know the two of you have been going through this very recently, getting new chairs. And so, yeah, I don't know. Whoever wants to start on this, just share kind of like, I know your experiences and any thoughts on this column specifically.
Oh, I would love to share my experiences. Yes, it has definitely been a pain in the, you know what? I got my new wheelchair, really nice. It's a Permobil. It's the mid-wheel drive. I've got all the bells and whistles on it, the headlights, the taillights, the flashers. I mean, just everything on it. And I haven't been able to use it because you and Deanne are much younger than I am, but I'll be 56 in August. And all of the wheelchairs that I've ever had have had sling seats. Well, sling seats are wonderful, but they're also a curse because they do a lot of damage to your hips. They rotate your hips inward. And over the course of years, I've gone through a lot of damage. My right hip, all the muscle and fat in my right gluteus maximus, my butt cheek is gone. So I'm basically sitting on bone and nerve. Well, the problem with these newer style chairs now is that they don't come with sling seats. They come with these hard pan seats. So it's like sitting, it would be like you sitting me down on a concrete. Everything is flat. Well, my hips are not used to it. So, you know, we're trying different cushions. Rojo came out with one that's really good that you can remove the back portion of the air bladder, which will give you the ability to offload pressure that's on your tailbone. And that's where a lot of my pressure starts from. So anyway, as a matter of fact, as we speak, they're coming out today to make the final adjustments. So, you know, I can't do the functions on the chair because I'm not strong enough. So they got a special box that they can connect up to five or six different micro switches. So they're setting up the micro switches so I can do those functions. And it just takes very little pressure to tap this micro switch. And if one of the functions is laying back. So if I tap and hold that micro switch, it'll lay me back till I let go of it. And then when I want to come back up into a neutral sitting position, I tap it again and hold it down and it'll come up until I let go of it. So they're setting
up switches
for the different.
Just so your arm doesn't slip when you're doing that.
Right, exactly. And that's the problem is I can control the functions through the joystick. They set up a micro switch that'll go into the function mode. But the problem is if you lay too far back, those of us with SMA don't have a lot of control in our arms. And as we lay back, our arm slides away from the controller.
Yep.
And I don't want to be in a position to where one day my caregivers are gone and I want to lay back for a minute and not be able to get back up. So
I have that.
So they're going to be setting up all these micro switches for me today. And they're going to take the left armrest off and move the USB connection over to the right armrest. I don't like the left armrest because I feel cooped in, and I've never had a left armrest on any of my chairs. I've always taken them off. So, you know, we have a couple of hours of adjustments to make, but hopefully I'm going to be able to get in this chair sometime this week and start. I'm not going to say breaking the chair in as much as I'm going to be breaking my body in, because it's, you know, you have to force yourself to do it. And my physical therapist have already told me that as soon as I get in the chair, bring it up there to them, they're going to do some final measurements and make any adjustments. And the wheelchair company said they would come out and do anything to make it easier. So it's just one of these things where I'm going to have to sit in it for, you know, say 2 or 3 hours a day. And then when I start getting uncomfortable, go back to my old chair and do that day after day after day. And eventually I'm just going to have to force my body to accept it.
It does get a little bit easier. I know I've had mine for about 8 months now. It does get easier over time, but I'm still 8 months in and doing adjustments. So
I know. And I'm not a very patient person when it comes to these changes, you know, but even though this one is going to be very difficult for me to do, I know that in 5 or 6 years, when I get another chair, it'll have a hard pan seat and I won't have near the difficulty that I'm going through right now. It'll be easier to switch. I mean, if this chair had a sling seat, I would have already been in it. But so I think once my body gets adjusted to this new chair, but Katie's article that she wrote was really, really good. I mean, she has a very good way with words, and to listen to her describe what she was going through are exactly the same issues that I'm going through.
Right, right. Well, and I like the phrase you used of like breaking your body into it. It is so true. And I think that's a lot of people outside, like our communities, can't really grasp that, but it is so true of, you know, it's like getting a new body when you get a new chair, and the smallest differences between one chair and another make a world of difference. And I mean, I love mine now, but when I first got into it, it felt really weird. And just moving my joystick was moved a few inches over from the previous chair to try to accommodate me better. And that alone took some time to get used to. But once you do adapt, it makes a world of difference in a very good way.
And it will. I mean, I know that I'm going to get used to it.
Sure.
And it's just the fact of me getting my body in the chair and, you know, going through the discomfort that I know I'm going to go through.
Yeah. But
eventually it will get easier, kind of like Deanne said.
And when Katie was talking about getting her first chair, having a wheelchair that does everything it does is so liberating.
Oh, yeah.
When parents can be very devastated that their child's going to be in a wheelchair and not be able to walk, but then when they get that first chair, you can see that they can do so much with that chair.
That's right. Their level of independence goes up exponentially. Yep. And, you know, I think that's another thing that people don't realize. For the able body to get up out of one chair and go to another, it's not that big a deal. But for those of us that have been in wheelchairs all of our lives, this is a major big deal for us. And it takes time. It's going to be uncomfortable for a while. So if you know somebody that's got SMA, if you're a mother or a father of a child, when they get a new chair, show a lot of patience. Don't think that your child or your loved one that has SMA that's going through this new chair type of change, don't think that they're just complaining to be complaining. Listen to them, because they are going through quite a bit of discomfort.
And a lot of times those adjustments can be made to make it more comfortable.
Absolutely.
So if someone can help with that, that's wonderful.
Absolutely. No, and like I said, I think this is a very, it just hits on such a universal subject for all wheelchair users. So definitely encourage listeners, if you haven't already read this column, go check it out. Again, all the articles and columns we discussed today will be linked in the description. And then the next one I wanted to touch on was going back to the subject earlier, we're talking about of, you know, things starting to reopen and more people getting vaccinated. This idea of kind of returning to normal is on people's minds, and what does that look like? And so Brianna Albers wrote a really great column called "I'm Taking My Time Returning to Normal," where she talks about this, about, you know, and she is vaccinated, but she's also kind of taking her time and still getting acclimated to this idea of things reopening. And so I'll read just this excerpt where she says, "It took me a while to realize that I was adjusting. The fatigue was months in the making, months of isolation, of watching the world through my bedroom window. It's not like I forgot how to socialize, but there's still a sense of remembrance to it all." And I really love that line because, I mean, even as someone who is very extroverted and, you know, is longing to see people again and get out and do the things I always love doing, it's still quite an adjustment after over a year of, you know, quarantine and dealing with the pandemic and just getting used to this idea of kind of society reopening more or less to what it was before the pandemic. And so I think Brianna really articulated a lot of the feelings many people in our community are experiencing, because for most of us, you know, we have been very isolated for the better part of a year. And so, I really like this. Deanne, I know you kind of touched on this earlier too, so I don't know if you have any other thoughts.
Well, I look at it a little bit differently because I don't like to say returning to normal because I think we kind of have to create a new normal in a way. I know like Brianna is talking about, it takes a lot more energy to do some of the things that we did before. So now, you know, I'm gauging what I can do with just where I'm at right now and not trying to compare it to where I was before, if that makes sense. Just trying to kind of go with what I can do and not be hard on myself and do what I can, do what feels comfortable for me, like I said before, and not worry about what other people are doing.
Absolutely. I think that comparing yourself to others can be a very dangerous road to go to. Like in general, you have to work at your own pace and, you know, do what you feel comfortable with. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Hey, Kevin.
Yeah.
I think the one line in her article that I loved the most was when she's talking about the mask mandates and that, you know, people can start taking their mask off. She says, "You'll pry mine from my stone cold, long dead hands."
I love that.
There are a lot of people that are going to keep their masks and use them just to play on the safe side. And, you know, whether you agree or disagree with it, it's an individual decision.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I think like, I think that's one of the, again, a silver lining to come out of all this is like, because a lot of people in our communities were already wearing masks well before the pandemic because we're more susceptible to any kind of viruses. And so I do appreciate that. I mean, not entirely, because there are still some people who are very vocal anti-maskers, but I think in general, that stigma around wearing a mask has dissipated a lot more and hopefully will, you know, not be as much of a thing in the future, so that, you know, when we have people in our communities, particularly during cold and flu season, you know, wearing masks, that, you know, that's more accepted. Not that we shouldn't have to worry about that anyway, but it is good to see that, like, you know, whereas I think people used to be more like afraid of, like, if they see someone wearing a mask, they're like, "Oh, what do they have?" Now it's just more of a, "Oh, okay, it's just something to, you know, keep you safe from various illnesses that are always going around the world." So, you know.
Yeah. And I think for me, I'm a very visual person. I like to see people's faces.
Sure.
So when I went to physical therapy a couple of weeks ago, I mean, I go every week, but a couple of weeks ago, they were having to wear two masks. Now they're back down to one. And they're thinking probably by the end of the year, they'll be able to take their mask off. You know, I work with two very beautiful physical therapists, and they've got beautiful smiles. And I gauge people's faces with regards to their reactions. So with their mask on, I mean, I can tell if they're smiling by their eyes, but it'll be nice to eventually see some smiles.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I no, for sure. It's like I said, I think it's and like Bree articulates in this column, it's weird after a year of this, kind of the idea of getting back to normal. And I, Deanna, I like what you said a lot about you know, the more of a new normal, and you know, they're just adaptations we've made along the way, and that's okay. So cool. Well, and then the last column I wanted to touch on was, and this kind of harkens back to the discussion we had earlier on the film Sound of Metal and kind of the disability journey there. But Sherry Toe wrote a really great column called "I Don't Want a World Without SMA, Here's Why." And, you know, the headline might be jarring for a lot of people, but I think if you really look at the column and read it, you'll see what she's really talking about. And this idea of, you know, contemplating what it would be like if she never had SMA, how she might be different. And she also talks about her specific story about how her family considered moving to the US from Singapore back when she was diagnosed, but were unable to because of financial reasons. But, you know, she talks about that, of how SMA and also Singapore and all these other factors in her life are key parts of her identity. And so I'll read this excerpt here where she says, "I don't know the Sherry who would have grown up in the US. I don't know the Sherry who might have lived without SMA. But I like the Sherry who's writing this column, whose perspective wouldn't exist without the existing broad and fine strokes in her life's landscape. And although people like me were born into an inaccessible world, not readily suited to us, we have nonetheless carved spaces like this site for ourselves and others. And I like that line a lot, just because, you know, having written for SMA News Today for 4 years now, that's what I see a lot, is just, you know, it really is a space that we can make our own and share our perspectives and, you know, share our identities and our stories with the world. So, I mean, like I said, going back to that discussion on Sound of Metal and the character's disability journey and sort of, you know, reluctantly at first, you know, having to come to terms with it, but then over time, it becoming more a part of his identity. That's what I connected with about this column, was it's not saying like, oh, there should be no cure, blah, 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 or any like research. It's more, she wrote a really thoughtful piece about, you know, I don't know what my life would look like without SMA and without my disability, and if it would be better, if it would be worse. So, but I like where she says, you know, I like the person that I am today. And I think, you know, there are many factors in my life that have played a part in who I am. So that's what I really liked about this piece. I don't know if you guys had any thoughts to add to that.
I did think this was a very interesting article, because if you think about eradicating disease altogether, what our world would be like, but there's always something, and it's kind of like, at what point do you say, okay, this is okay, but this isn't okay. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm making sense here.
Yes. No, exactly. Yeah.
But so I know some people are very against treatment at all, because they were born with SMA and this is how it is. But then others, like ourselves, are taking the treatment to maybe slow or stop the progression, because we know, you know, what it's like living with the disease and how difficult it can be. But again, it is part of who I am, and I can't take that away. And I don't know in the future if the treatments will take that away for people. If, I don't know, it's kind of an interesting concept to think about.
Yeah, it is interesting. I think SMA has shaped all of us. You know, we are living with a progressive disease. So what would we have been if we didn't have SMA? Me, I would be a football player making hundreds of millions of dollars. But, you know, who needs money? Well, okay, that was a dumb statement. Anyway, who would we have been if we didn't have SMA? Personally, I'm very satisfied with my life. Mm-hmm. I'm educated. I've held great jobs. I hold a great job right now with BioNews. I'm very proud of what I've done. You know, what would I have done if I didn't have SMA? It's always a question that kind of lingers in the back of your mind, but I really don't think about it too much, because I'm too busy living my life. You know, I'm not going to let this disease run me. Okay.
And it's,
it is a part of me, but it doesn't run my life. I run my life. Man, it's how I see my life and do with my life is my own business.
And it's something that you can think about, like becoming a professional football player, but you don't know what your life would have been like.
Oh, no, I'm definite. I would have been a big
player. You know, it's nobody, you don't know, because it is such a part of our lives.
Yeah.
So. I think back to, there was a chapter in Shane Brickaw's last book, I think, where he talked about this concept, and, you know, he imagined like, okay, what would my, for instance, my morning routine look like if I didn't have SMA? And, you know, obviously all the caregiving stuff aside, he said, well, I would still make my coffee in the morning. I'd still read a book. I'd still, you know, look out of the sun, like all the things that I do now, because I'm still exactly, Michael, like you said, you know, you're still living your life, and that really wouldn't be that different, I don't think. I mean, yeah, you might have different circumstances. You might have different, maybe even different interests. I don't know. But for the most part, it's like, it does shape you, and you're still, if you're still living your life, then that's really what matters. And so, that's, I think, a lot of, you know, what I got out of this column. And I thought it was a really powerful piece. So that was,
and I think it's easier for individuals like us that were born with this disease.
Yeah.
We didn't have anything taken away from us.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, we've lived with this all of our life. As we've aged and as we've gotten older, yes, we've gotten worse. It's just the natural history of the disease. But we are who we are, not because of our disease. I think, you know, my life is very good. I'm very happy with it. So I don't know what I would have done.
Yeah.
In a way, I'm kind of glad I am who I am.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, that's a great point. And yeah, you, and I do think it is, I mean, I don't want to speak for everyone in various disability communities, but I mean, I do think it is a very different experience when, you know, you're born, let's say, relatively able-bodied, and then you develop something later on in life. I think that's a very different experience than what we've had, because like you said, we were born with it. This is all we've ever known. So it's really interesting to think about, but yeah.
I do think we have kind of a fix it mentality. Where when something's wrong, we want to fix it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, at what point do we say, okay, this is okay where we're at and we don't need to fix it? But I don't know.
Very true.
Sure. Absolutely.
And by the way, Deanne, if you can fix something, come over here and fix my new wheelchair.
Work your magic.
I'm working on fixing mine.
Maybe by the next episode, we'll hear fantastic updates on your journey.
You'll love it.
Yeah.
Yes. Maybe so. Maybe so.
Yes. Here's to hoping for that. So absolutely. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, guys, thank you so much. This is, as always, this has been a great conversation. And, you know, and like I said, for our listeners out there, you can check out all the articles and columns we discussed on this episode in the linked in the description. And you can check it out everything on SMA News Today. So thank you so much, guys, for being here today. And for our listeners out there, you can hear more stories and conversations like this by subscribing to the SMA News Today podcast. You can also connect with us directly on our forums and follow our main website at smanewstoday.com for the latest SMA news and perspectives. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. Thanks for listening, and we will see you all next time.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.smanewstoday.com, and be sure to follow us on social media and join our SMA News Today forums, a trusted SMA community ready to welcome you anytime.